to the old me, scared and unseen. You're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is Keeping It Real on Purpose, the podcast where we come together with real talk about real issues and struggles in life, relationships, and in business, all of which is on purpose. I am your host, Edna White, and today our guest is none other than the esteemed business owner, speaker, and podcast host, Simon Rennie. Welcome to Keeping It Real on Purpose.
Thanks so much for having me. I know I'm really excited to be here and share my story.
Wonderful. We are so glad to have you, the audience and myself. How do you show up in the world? Share that with us.
Yeah, so like I am passionate about men's mental health, and my business is centered around men's mental health, and I guess it shows up as a mental health advocate. So I'm very open about my own journey with mental illness. I've lived with obsessive compulsive disorder since I was 8 years old, and I've experienced lots of bouts of depression and anxiety. And I even experienced workplace burnout in 2020 in my old career. So I'm very passionate about talking about these things because I know a lot of guys out there really struggle with that. And so I hope to be an inspiration for guys to speak up about mental illness.
Right.
But also, you know, people in general to speak up about mental illness because it's still very much a taboo topic. And the more we can talk about it, the more we can normalize it, like
absolutely,
we do our physical health as well.
Absolutely. So that's a really good point. About two years ago, I had a few men on talking about men's mental health because I had the strong woman's syndrome, you know, like, oh, okay, you know, no crying, no getting sad, you know, no, you know, the typical thing, you know, and it really was killing me. It was making me very ill until I realized it was really killing me to kind of live up to this strong person persona. I really didn't understand, you know, and I can understand now how men are told no crying, stiff upper lip, you know, you're the leader of the group, of the family, you know, if your father passes away, you're now that you take his place. I can really understand that. Can you give a little bit of like insight to that space where men, you know, about
mental health? I was only reflecting about this week as well. So I grew up in the 80s and 90s in the northern suburbs of Adelaide. So Adelaide, South Australia, is like a working class town.
Gotcha.
But particularly the northern suburbs, it's manufacturing, it's trades, and there's pockets of welfare and low socioeconomic. So in the 80s and 90s, this is all before the internet and before smartphones and before broadband internet, and so my worldview was really I guess influenced by the people around me. So I had three brothers in my household plus my dad, so four guys in the household. Sorry, Mum. and like I played Australian rules football, basketball, athletics, and So everything I knew about being a man was influenced by the people in these environments and so forth. So we were taught, like, yeah, boys don't cry because to be a man is to be masculine and tough and strong and not show emotions. And so from a very young age, that's all I knew. That's how I knew to be and live and to feel and to emote. But then when I developed OCD at 8, like, I couldn't tell anybody and talk about it because, A, I didn't know what mental health was or mental illness was. In that period, we didn't talk about it. And I didn't know what was happening, and it was very weird what was happening. So I bottled it up for 20 years. And it wasn't until 10 years ago that I finally went into a doctor's room and said, I think I have mental health issues. And from there, I've had a 10-year journey of opening up and talking to different therapists and being on medications. And then now, yeah, opening up my own Mindful Men business dedicated to stopping guys from bottling it up for 20 years and challenging those social constructs of what it means to be a man. And then channeling our emotions in a healthy way rather than things like explosive anger or explosive, you know, suicide and all these types of things, actually getting the help when they need it.
And I think you said something that's really important, the emotional part. I think the not paying attention or addressing the emotions and having them, you know, experiencing them really lent to our mental status, our mental issues, you know, me not crying, me not laughing, you know, and I thought it was all like, we couldn't do those things. Like, you know, my trauma was hinged on children should be seen and not heard. So it was like, you know, I got to be quiet. I can't, you know, if something's hurting me, I got to be quiet. I can't tell everybody that, you know, because I'm supposed to be seen. And I know now I see how it like kind of plays for the men. That's even like compounded double, you know, it really is. It really is. It's compounded.
It's an interesting point because like I remember being around that 10 years old and in the schoolyard and my best mate was crying one day. And I went into that automatic masculinity mode. And I said, and I went up to him and said, mate, you've got to stop crying. Boys don't cry. I didn't even ask him what was wrong.
And, right.
And he's like, and he looked at me and he said, Simon, I can cry if I want to.
Oh.
And I'm like, what? This is a foreign language you're talking about like right now. Like, we are not meant to cry. He's like, I can cry if I want to. And he pushed me away and that was it. And that planted the seed that I've now got today, that I'm living today. That, okay. Boys can cry. Maybe the things I was taught in the 80s and 90s before the beautiful age of Google and Facebook and social media, because it's very easy for young people these days to get information. Go, okay, I'm feeling these things. Do a quick Dr. Google search. Okay, maybe I've got some mental health issues. And it's okay for them to talk about it. But 80s and 90s, like doing dial-up, trying to find a doctor. Like
forget it.
Doctors didn't even have websites back then. You know?
I think the only doctor we ever heard of was our guidance counselors. Remember them? The guidance counselors? I don't know what they're called now.
Guidance counselors and doctors. And,
yeah, I don't know what they're called now, but the guidance counselors was like our outlet, you know, our outlet.
And then the next part was Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil. And there was another doctor. There was a book. Remember that book that came out, How to Have a Newborn and all? What was the guy's name? I can't remember his name. And he had this big book out and you had to, you know, you had to read. I forgot the name of the man. Because as soon as you said that, I was like, what is his name? It's not Freud, but it's somebody else that you had to have this book. And matter of fact, I think he came out from, if it was not Oprah, it was one of Jenny, like, you know, remember Jenny Jones? Remember her? Remember her? Remember, right? It was on a Jenny Jones show or something like that. But, you know, that was all our only answers. Like, those kind of shows, when he started coming out, like, when you started acting weird, you're like, that might be it. You know, that might be it. You know?
Things like Jerry Springer and the Ricky Lake show.
Yeah, that's right. They were I forgot about Ricky Lake. Yeah, Ricky Lake,
Ricky Lake was my favorite, but... that's where we learned about how to be guys and how to be people in the world.
Yeah,
and,
Yeah.
And like in the northern suburbs of Adelaide, where it's working class and it's welfare and it's low socioeconomic, like it was that tough mantra in order to survive and thrive and you know, pave your own way.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, yeah.
You know, in 2022, we don't actually have to be like that. You know, there's so many more options to open up and get the help we need and be the people that we've, you know, always wanted to be and not just happen to be now. So,
but do you find that even now there's not that, you know, translation that this is available to you?
Particularly for guys, because like whenever I look up like a new therapy service for myself, like there's a lot of women-centric ones or kids-centric ones.
Yeah.
But not so many for men.
Mm-hmm.
And still men struggle, like men do struggle to still talk about it. Like I'm on different socials and I'm starting to see guys open up, particularly dads are opening up about wanting to be the dad that they never really had.
Yeah.
Like my dad was very hands off, you know, and I think if I had a closer relationship with him, maybe things would have been different, but that's just not what we did. It wasn't what he knew how to do.
Yeah, sure.
And even today, like, he wouldn't sit down and talk to me about mental health. Like, it's not something that he would openly do.
Yeah.
So I think it's still so much of a taboo for guys to talk about, but that's why I do what I do. That's why I jump on podcasts. That's why I've got the Mindful Men podcast, where I just talk about random things with random people across the world to show guys that it's okay just to start talking.
Sure. Now, do you find it difficult to put in, like you said about your dad, like he wants to, you know, he doesn't talk about that. Do you try to kind of make that happen or try to talk with him? Do you find it difficult to, like, share? Well,
he's the kind of guy that you ring the household, because he lives in a different, he still lives in Adelaide, and I live in the Sunshine Coast now in Queensland.
Okay, okay.
So he's the kind of guy that if you rang the house, he would just go, oh, I'll get mum for you. So he's a man of few words.
Yeah.
So like it's just
talk to mom about that. Yeah.
So
he gets the filtered version. So you tell mom tells him in the filtered version. That's what happens.
I think mum's even just stopped bothering him now, so he just kind of keeps it to herself. So.
Okay, so he's a man of few words. And back then it was that, because they had so much to tend to, you know, they had more responsibilities on their shoulders and more socioeconomic issues that came first before all of that. And they chose the right women to kind of like make sure that this was happening, you know, that they take care of the family, you know? So I see that. Yeah. That's different. Yeah. So let's talk about, like, now I know that you're an entrepreneur, right? You know, let's talk about your business. Like, this is, I rarely meet men who kind of start this, you know, focusing on just men. You know, there's women, you know, they focus on moms with boys or moms with young sons, you know, but I think I know two other people that have, like, especially men, that have men-centered businesses. How is that for you?
It's amazing. So it's only a startup business. I've only been in operation since August.
Okay.
So I think my journey into business was one of, probably I took a 15-year detour. But I remember coming out of high school and I said to myself, like, I want to help people that are just like me, but I didn't know what like me was, because we still weren't talking about mental health in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I went to uni and I could have done two things. I could have done visual art, because I love art, and art was a great way for me to manage my anxiety and my depression. It was a way for me to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I chose the safe option, the one, a generic degree that could lead to a 9-to-5 job. Because I thought that's how you live the Australian dream or the American dream. Or
absolutely.
Dream
9-to-5. Yeah.
You know, you get a 9-to-5, you get a mortgage, you get a family.
Yep. Like,
this is the path that we're supposed to take in life.
Right.
And so I did a first year in psychology, but it just got too difficult. So I ended up finishing in anthropology and landed myself in the public service, in the Australian public service, which is government work. And I spent 15 years there, and it got to a point when I think 2018, when I'm like, there's got to be more to life than doing this 9 to 5. It was a good job. Like, I had some really interesting jobs, but a lot of boring jobs as well. Yeah. And it just didn't light me up. And by this time, I knew what mental health was because I'd been diagnosed in, 2012, I think it was. Yeah, so 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to get into mental health. So that's when I decided to do mature age study. And I went back and did a master's of social work. So I was doing that part-time in the nights and the weekends. I was still working my 9 to 5. We had 2 kids in that time. And then we had COVID lockdowns halfway through. So COVID came along in 2020. And that's when I burnt out as well. And through that burnout process, and even before that, I'm like, I've got to start my own business. I've got to take control of my own life, get that time freedom, that money freedom that, I want for my kids, because I want to be around when they do their sports, and I want to be there for pickups and drop-offs at school and stuff like that. Yeah. And I don't want to work 9 to 5. I want to have more freedom in my life and more control about my own destiny.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where the seed for having a business started. And then so last year I finished the degree, and then this year I said, you know what, it's time. It's time for me to step away from that only career I've ever known and start this business. So it's been really scary because all of a sudden I've got to find my own clients. I don't have a stable income because I had the stable income for 15 years. I've got the mortgage. I've got kids in school. But now I've got to find, work. And I've got social anxiety, so it's weird because I have a podcast and I'm talking to you, but like putting myself out there in the community network,
it's really
confronting for me. And so, but I'm just doing it. I'm out there talking to businesses and other people and slowly getting clients, calling and trying to work out how to do Google ads and Facebook ads and Instagram lives and all that type of stuff. Like the daggy dads do.
Yeah.
and it's great. Like, I've got some clients in the door. I've got supervision where I'm getting some feedback from another social worker, and I've got big dreams for it. So this is only in its baby stage, but eventually I've got this idea of a community space where guys in the community can come and get mental health support, but also like get well-being support. So do things like yoga, Pilates. There's a coffee shop there, so have some coffee. Have barbecues on the weekend, do some exercise as well, and just be well and live well. And that's the dream for Mindful Men in the future.
Okay. Because I hear you about the 9 to 5, and I've been talking about this with everybody. I owned my own business for about 20 years, and then I started working for someone else, a nonprofit organization, which I want to say I love the mission, but I hated the whole thing. I just hated it all. And I was like, there's no, when you are assigned or purposed, I don't see how you can stay. I'm a free spirit. My son always says, Mom, you're a free spirit. You could do whatever you want. And I was like, what are you talking about? No, I have to listen to, no, it's different with free spirits. They just get in and they fit in. It's just, that's the way it is. So, when I was there, I felt like I was confined. Like, I really felt like I had these wings that just couldn't, and I kept flapping and I couldn't get out of it. Like, and I for you, 15 years, I can imagine, I did 4, I think. And I started having migraines, and I had to go see the doctor. I was on medication, and that was just 4 years. 4 years. And I can imagine 15, I probably would probably be somewhere, and it wouldn't be in front of you. It wouldn't be in front of you, I'm pretty sure. But
the early part of my career, like, I was very naive anyway. I was only young, and so I did learn a lot around systems and networking and people, all that type of. But I also knew what I didn't want.
Right.
And it wasn't that, 9 to 5. I wanted more control.
Right.
But it's funny, I've exchanged the 9 to 5 for a 7 to 7. It feels like.
And you get to learn, and this is what I've learned along the way. the 7 to 7 then turns to, I got to do something about this. So now I start creating a team, hiring people to do the work, you know, that I now become the CEO instead of the person that's doing all the work. And so you get to, it becomes the 7 to 3, then it becomes 7 to 9, you know, and it gives you the work and the free. It will change. It will change as you go along, because I've learned that, you know, and you seem like someone that's going to invest, knows that it's important for this business. So you're going to invest in yourself and you're going to say, hey, I need these people to be working for me. I can't be doing all this.
And I'm already thinking about that.
Yes. But listen, it took me getting a coach of my own, to tell me that. And guess what I did? I still they don't know how to talk like me. And I still bucked against him. And he was very calm. He says, well, think about what I'm saying, but I think you'd be better off working over here as a CEO doing this, this, and this, than opposed to doing this. So I was like, you know, I'm still bucking, you know, because this is, like you said, my baby. This is my baby. You can't mess with my baby, you know? And that's how you feel as an entrepreneur. This is your baby. No one can do her like you, you know? You know? And you don't want to trust everyone, but then you have to trust yourself well enough to trust others that they can do the job that you're looking to do. You know,
so yeah, don't worry. I'm already looking to outsource my admin.
Yes. Yes. That's great. Yes. That was the best thing I ever did. And when I did that, I was like, now what do I do with myself? You know, what do I do with myself? I don't have to do that, you know, and all I'm doing is like doing videos, you know, doing some lives and talking to people, you know, making the connections, you know, going on appointments, networking. That's what a CEO does, you know? That's what he or she does. It's like, you're the face of the business. You got to go and show, you know? So it's different. Definitely. It's different when you first start off. And someone just taught me this just a few moments ago. She said to me, you know, we have to think about our business like Target, Walmart, any of those businesses do, right? And I didn't think about it. So I started thinking about my clients and I was like, wait a minute. My clients are still doing everything by themselves. And that's right. You have to have a team. You have to have, you got to hire people. And it was like, you know what we're leaning on is the small business part of it. We got to start studying business. We got to say, we're in business. We're not in small business. We're in business. You know?
I like that. Yeah, it's a really good mindset, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Because it makes a change.
Recruiting tomorrow.
Yeah. Go on Indeed, you know, go on Indeed and get in and start hiring. And it makes so much sense. And even I was like, well, I know you're not here for the audience. You're here for me. You know, you're here for me, you know. So tell us about, how, you know, being a speaker, you know, and we haven't talked about, I haven't talked about this before, but a male speaker in front of the masses, how does that process look so that audience can feel what you feel when you walk out there and you got like 100 to 500 people like in front of you? How does that feel?
Oh, I don't know that many people. but I think my speaking, it comes through more my like telehealth and my podcast. So I speak that way. And I am, you know, we are booking up for summits coming up in December.
Okay.
And in the new year, I'm going to be hosting a men's group in Australia here.
Oh, okay.
Via telehealth. So it accesses, you know, it enables me to access people across the country.
Oh, nice.
But a lot of it is like doing Instagram lives and Facebook lives.
Okay.
And having my own podcast with the hope that my voice and my story,
mm-hmm.
I guess, inspires something in somebody else to get support.
Right.
And whether or not that's one person in Australia or one person across the globe, it's really focused in that way because getting a room of 500 blokes getting 500 blokes into a room is probably not going to happen.
Right.
Particularly in this early stage. So at the moment, my focus is online.
Right, okay.
Because it reaches people in their homes. It reaches people when they're sitting on the train or the bus or they're driving in their car.
Okay.
A lot of guys do, you know, work in their car and they spend a lot of time in their car. So if they can hear me on a podcast or whatever, that's where my focus is for speaking. And it does. It serves two purposes. One, it helps me with my social anxiety, and I'm pretty open with that because when we have a fear of talking, you know, it's good to put ourselves out there into talking situations and share our stories. And by doing that over and over again, it gives me confidence, and I can instill that onto my clients as well. The more you can talk about mental health, the easier it gets. Because the first time I did talk about it, I think it was the hardest thing I've ever had to say, and I choked on the words as they came out to my doctor. But now I can talk to you across the globe, and it's easy for me to talk about. So it's really, that's where the focus is. And eventually, I'd love to get into some bigger, you know, 500,000 people type events and just keep sharing this story. And I know I would be a nervous wreck because I'm a nervous wreck before I even press record on my own podcast. You should see it. Like I would be pacing the house and going to the toilet five times and doing all those nervous wee's on my own podcast.
Yeah.
But once I sit down and I you know, put the camera on and speak to someone like you, that all just goes away and I'm in the zone. And I think because I'm so passionate about it, and like even as I said, I'm doing that 7 to 7 work, I kind of jump out of the bed at, you know, sometimes I'm on these at 5:45 in the morning.
Gotcha.
In the morning.
Yeah.
But I love it because it lights me up and it's really my purpose now.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have done that in my old 9 to 5.
No.
I would have been dragging myself out of bed.
No.
10 to 9 to start.
No. I wouldn't have never done that. I would like, no.
Yeah. So like the speaking is, and as you said, it's me. It's putting my face out there for the business. And Mindful Men is Simon Rennie. And Simon Rennie is Mindful Men. And the more I can do it online, then, you know, that will lead to bigger things. I mean, as I said, I'm only a new business, so it's baby steps, but yeah, there's big things coming in the future.
Sure. Can you share with me, I know you said it a couple of times, what social anxiety is?
Yeah, so social anxiety and anxiety in more general is, you know, we have stress in our lives and a lot of people feel stress. They might have something coming up. Maybe they've got to do a presentation at work, for example, and, you know, they think about it and think about it. They get a bit nervous. They might get shaky hands or sweating and all this type of stuff. And then it goes away. But things with anxiety is it's much more profound and it's much longer lasting.
Okay.
So even after the event, you know, you could get to the point where you're vomiting. You know, you could have, you know, gastro issues like diarrhea and all that type of stuff, migraines, headaches, and almost panic attacks as well. I've had panic attacks leading, you know, from social anxiety.
Okay.
But also my anxiety is connected with obsessive compulsive disorder. And so in obsessive compulsive disorder, I have a high level of perfectionism as well.
Okay.
So I need things to be exactly perfect. And if they're not perfect or they're not just right, that drives a huge amount of overwhelm and anxiety to the point where I might not be able to function. Now, this is all happening on the inside of me because I wear a mask.
Right.
So on the outside, I look like this and I'm talking like this. On the inside, I'm basically crapping myself, you know, like to put it brightly.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so anxiety is much more profound than stress and you hold on to that and then it snowballs into something else and something else and something
else.
Where stress starts and stops. So yeah, it's a more profound version of stress. And so social anxiety is anxiety centered around socialization.
Okay.
So it's around talking to people and it's around being in social environments, like going to a party or whatever. You might become really reserved. And people that experience social anxiety often refrain from going into social events. So they might say, yeah, I'm going to come to the party, but never show up.
That's even with family? That's even with a family function?
Yeah, family, friends, it could be anything, you know. Because the whole idea of being around other people, why you want to do it, and it's not like you don't want to do it, but it's the fact that it's just the sounds, the having to talk and converse is really can be quite overwhelming, particularly for people who are introverted and more likely to keep to themselves or have a very small social network, like maybe one or two friends as opposed to 50 friends type thing.
Okay. That's very good information. Well, audience, I know you hear this, and this is really good information. I have to ask questions. And thank you, Simon, for that. Is there a way that the audience can kind of get in touch with you and, you know, on social media? How can they reach out?
Yeah, so the best way is through my website because it links to my social media because I've got so many links now, it's hard to reel them all off. But so my website is www.mindful-men.com.au.
Okay.
And that links to, A, my social, so I'm on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. But I've also got the Mindful Men podcast as well, which is on YouTube. It's also on Apple and Spotify and a few other platforms.
Nice.
And if you're in Australia, it also, my website has my therapy support on it as well. So if you're in Australia and wanting therapeutic support, I do telehealth Australia wide. So it's like this Zoom call.
Okay.
But I also do in person on the Sunshine Coast where I live as well. So
nice.
I'm happy to come out to people's homes or in a community, but also I've got a clinic one day a week in Maroochydore here. So yeah, the best place is the website.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you very much. Well, Simon Rennie, I appreciate giving this information to my audience. Now, what would you give, final words that you would give the audience to encourage them or empower them?
Yeah, so I guess from a business perspective, it's follow your dreams. And really, it's never too late to like change careers. So, you know, think about what we've talked about today. And I chose that safe career. It didn't light me up. But now I went back and did more study, and now I'm in that career I've always wanted to be in. And sometimes it can take 15 years to figure out what that is.
Right.
So, yeah, follow your dreams. If you're starting university or college or whatever, you know, go with the course that lights you up, not the one that you think is going to give you a 9-to-5.
Right.
But if you're talking about mental health, just know that it's okay to be not okay. And it's not weak to speak. And, guys, you can do it too. Like, I'm here talking about it. You can talk about it too.
That is terrific. Well, Simon, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for being here. And that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks for listening, audience. If you enjoyed the episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post it about on social media, or just leave a review. To catch me with my latest goings on, you can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at EJW Coaching. And I want to thank you again, Simon. This is Edna White and my esteemed guest of Mindful Men, Simon Rennie, saying goodbye for now.
Edna, thanks so much. I really enjoyed our chat. And audience, yeah, get on to Edna and give her a 5-star rating. She's doing amazing work.
Thank you.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.